Welcome to Musugin here on the Boom Talks, a tech podcast. This is the season 2 and we were going with the flow, The Power of Your Subconscious Mind book, written by Joseph Murphy. So this is the episode number 14 and we will cover The Mental Healings in Ancient Times. Here the title clearly says, in the medieval age, how our ancestors used to cure themselves when they get wound or they get so many kind of diseases or any problems with their bodies. So in this chapter, we will explore and extract some powerful points which you can still apply in 2022 to cure yourself. So bloomers, let's start this amazing podcast. Sit calm and feel free while listening to me. Chapter number 4. Mental healings in ancient times. So let's explore this. Down through the ages, men of all the nations have somehow instinctively believed that somewhere there resided a healing power which could restore to normal the functions and sensations of man's body. They believed that this strange power could be invoked under certain conditions and that alleviation of human suffering would follow. The history of all the nations presents testimony in support of this belief. In the early history of the world, the power of secretly influencing men for good or evil, including the healing of the sick, was said to be possessed by the priests and the holy men of all the nations. Healing of the sick was supposed to be a power derived directly by them from the god, and the procedures and processes of healing varied throughout the world. The healing process took the form of supplications to God attended by various ceremonies such as laying on of hands, incantations, the application of amulets, talismans, rings, relics, and images. For example, in the religions of antiquity, priests in the ancient temples gave drugs to the patient and practiced hypnotic suggestions prior to the patient's sleep, telling him that the gods would visit him in his sleep and heal him. Many healings followed. Obviously, all this was the work of potent suggestions to the subconscious mind. After the performance of certain mysterious rites, the devotees of Hecate would see the goddess during sleep, provided that before going to sleep they had prayed to her according to the weird and fantastic instructions. They were told to mix lizards with resin, frankincense and myrrh and pound all this together in the open air under the crescent moon. Healings were reported in many cases following his Gurchak procedure. It is obvious that these strange procedures as mentioned in the illustrations given favored suggestion and acceptance by the subconscious mind of these people by making a powerful appeal to their imagination. Actually, in all these healings, the subconscious mind of the subject was the healer. In all ages, unofficial healers have obtained remarkable results in cases where authorized medical skill has failed. This gives the cause for thought. How do these healers in all parts of the world effect their cures? The answer to all these healings is due to the blind belief of the sick person, which leads the healing power resident in his subconscious mind. Many of the remedies and methods employed were rather strange and fantastic, which fired the imagination of the patients, causing an aroused emotional state. This state of mind facilitated the suggestion of health and was accepted both by the conscious and subconscious mind of the sick. This will be elaborated on the further in the next chapter. Now let's explore Biblical accounts on the use of the subconscious powers. Word whatsoever you desire, when you pray, believe that ye receive them, and ye shall have them. Note the difference in tenses. The inspired writer tells us to believe and accept as true the fact that our desire has already been accomplished and fulfilled, that it is already completed, and that it is realization will follow as a thing in the future. The success of this technique depends on the confidence and conviction that the thought, the idea, the picture is already a fact in mind. In order for anything to have substance in the realm of mind, it must be thought of as actually existing there. Here in a few cryptic words, in a concise and specific direction for making use of the creative power of thought by impressing upon the subconscious the particular thing which you desire. Your thought, idea, plan or purpose is as real on its own plane as your hand or your heart. In following the biblical technique, you completely eliminate from your mind all consideration of conditions, circumstances, or anything which might apply adverse contingencies. You are planting a seed concept in the mind, which, if you leave it undisturbed, will infallibly germinate into external fruition. prime condition which Jesus insisted upon was faith. Over and over again you read in the Bible, according to your faith is it done unto you. If you plant 13 type of seeds in the ground, you have faith they will grow after their kind. This is the way of seeds. And trusting the laws of growth and agriculture, you know that the seeds will come forth after their kind. Faith, as mentioned in the Bible, is a way of thinking, an attitude of mind, an inner certitude, knowing that the idea you fully accept in your conscious mind will be embodied in your subconscious mind and will be made manifest. Faith is, in a sense, accepting as true what your reason and senses deny. That is, a shutting out of that little rational, analytical, conscious mind and embracing an altitude, not its attitude, of complete reliance on the inner power of your subconscious mind. A classical instance of biblical technique is recorded in the Matthew, and when he first came into the house, the blind man came to him, and Jesus said unto them, "Believe you that I am able to do this?" They said unto them, Yea, Lord." Then touched he their eyes, saying, "According to your faith, be it unto you." And their eyes were opened, and Jesus straightly charged them, saying, "See that no man know it." In the words, "According to your faith, be it unto you," you can see that Jesus was actually appealing to the cooperation of the subconscious mind of the blind man. Their faith was their great expectancy, their inner healing, their inner conviction that something miraculous would happen, and that their prayer would be answered, and it was. This is a time-honored technique of healing utilized alike by all healing groups throughout the world, regardless of religious affiliation. In the words, "See that no man know it," Jesus enjoins the newly healed patients not to discuss their healing because they might be subjected to the skeptical and derogatory criticisms of the unbelieving. This might tend to undo the benefits they had received at the hand of Jesus by depositing thoughts of fear, doubt, and anxiety in the subconscious mind. For with authority and power he commanded the unclean spirits, and they came out. When the sick came to Jesus to be healed, they were healed by their faith together with his faith and understanding of the healing power of the subconscious mind. Whatever he decreed, he felt inwardly to be true. He and the people needing help were in the one universal subjective mind. And his silent inner knowing and conviction of the healing power changed the negative destructive patterns in the patient's subconscious. The result healings were the automatic response to the internal mental change. His command was his appeal to the subconscious mind of the patients, plus his awareness, feeling, and absolute trust in the response of the subconscious mind to the words which he spoke with authority. Now let's explore miracles at various shrines throughout the world. It is an established fact that cures have taken place at various shrines throughout the world, such as in Japan, India, Europe, and America. I have visited several of the famous shrines in Japan. At the world famous shrine called Daibutsu is a gigantic divinity of throne where Buddha is seated with the folded hands and the head is inclined in an attitude of profound contemplative ecstasy. It is 42 feet in height and is called the Great Buddha. Here I saw young and old making offerings at its feet. Money, fruit, rice, and oranges were offered. Candles were lit, incense was burned, and prayers of petition recited. The guide explained the chant of a young girl as she murmured a prayer, bowed low, and placed two oranges as an offering. She also lit a candle. He said she had lost her voice and it was restored at the shrine. She was thanking Buddha for restoring her voice. She had a simple faith that Buddha would give her back her singing voice if she followed a certain ritual, fasted, and made certain offerings. All this helped to kindle faith and expectancy, resulting in a conditioning of her mind to the point of belief. Her subconscious mind responded to her belief. To illustrate further the power of imagination and blind belief, I will relate the case of a relative of mine who had tuberculosis. His lungs were badly diseased. His son decided to heal his father. He came home to Perth, Western Australia, where his father lived, and said to him that he had met a monk who had descended from one of the healing shrines in Europe. This monk sold him a piece of true cross. He said that he gave the monk the equivalent of $500 for it. This young man had actually picked up the splinter of wood from the sidewalk, went to the jewelers, and had it sent in a ring so that it looked real. He told his father that dust touching the ring or the cross healed Manny. He inflamed and fired his father's imagination to the point that the old gentleman snatched the ring from him, placed it over his chest, breathed silently and went to sleep. In the morning, he was healed. All the clinic tests were proved negative. You know, of course, it was not a splinter of wood from the sidewalk that healed him. It was his imagination aroused to an intense degree, plus the confident expectancy of perfect healing. Imagination was joined to faith or subjective feeling, and a union of two brought about a healing. The father never learned of the trick that had been played upon him. If he had, he probably would have had a relapse. He remained completely cured and passed away 15 years later at the age of 89. Now let's explore one universal healing principle, and it is for all of us. It is a well-known fact that all of the various schools of the healing effect cures of the most wonderful character. The most obvious conclusion which strikes your mind is that there must be some underlying principle which is common to them all, namely the subconscious mind. And the one process of healing is faith. It will now be in order to recall to your mind once more the following fundamental truths. First, that you possess mental functions, which have been distinguished by designating one the subconscious and the conscious minds. Secondly, your subconscious mind is constantly amenable to the power of suggestion. Furthermore, your subconscious mind has complete control of the functions, conditions, and sensations of your body. I venture to believe that all readers of this book are familiar with the fact that symptoms of almost any disease can be introduced in hypnotic suggestions by suggestion. For example, a subject in a hypnotic state can develop a high temperature, flushed face, or chills according to the nature of suggestions given. By experiment, you can suggest to the person that he is paralyzed and cannot walk. It will be so. By illustration, you can hold a cup of cold water under the nose of the hypnotic subject and tell him, "This is full of pepper. Smell it." He will proceed to sneeze. Why do you think caused him to sneeze? The water or the suggestion? If a man says he is allergic to Timothy grass, you can place a synthetic flower or an empty glass in the front of his nose when he is in a hypnotic state and tell him it is Timothy grass. He will portray the usual allergic symptoms. This indicates that the cause of the disease is in the mind. The healing of the disease can also take place mentally. You realize that remarkable healings can take place through osteopathy, chiropractic medicine, and natural therapy, as well as through all the various religious bodies throughout the world. But it is obvious that all of these healings are brought about through the subconscious mind, the only healer there is. Notice how it heals a cut on your face caused by shaving. It knows exactly how to do it. The doctor dresses the wound and says, "Nature heals." Nature refers to nature law, the law of the subconscious mind or self-preservation, which is the function of the subconscious mind. The instinct of self-preservation is the first law of nature. Your strongest instinct is the most potent of all the suggestions. It is auto-suggestions. Now let's explore widely different theories. It would be tedious and unprofitable to discuss to any great extent the numerous theories advanced by great different religion sects and prayer therapy groups. There are a great number who claim that because their theory produces result, it is therefore the correct one. This, as explained in this chapter, cannot be true. You are aware that there are all types of healing. Franz Anton Mesmer, an Austrian physicist who practiced in Paris, discovered that by applying magnets to the diseased body, he could cure that disease miraculously. He also performed cures with the various other pieces of glass and metals. He discontinued this form of healing and claimed that these cures were due to animal magnetism, theorizing that this substance was projected from the healer to the patient. His method of treating disease from then was on by hypnotism, which is called mesmerizing in SJ. Other physicians say that all his healings were due to suggestion and nothing else. All of these groups, such as psychiatrists, psychologists, and osteopaths, chiropractors, physicians, and all the churches, are using the one universal power resident in the subconscious mind. Each may proclaim the healings are due to their theories. Process of all healing is a definite positive mental attitude and an inner attitude or a way of thinking called faith. Healing is due to confident expectancy, which acts as a powerful suggestion to the subconscious mind, releasing its healing potency. One man, does not heal by a different power than another. It is true. It is true. He may have his own theory or method. There is only one process of healing, and that is faith. So now, from now, have a faith, guys. Have a faith for anything you want to achieve, whether it's physical, mental, or any kind of thing which you want utterly. There is only one healing power, namely your subconscious mind. Select the theory and method you prefer. You can rest assured, if you have faith, you shall get results. Now let's explore the views of Paracelsus. Philippus Paracelsus, a famous Swiss alchemist and physician who lived from 1493 to 1541, was a great healer in his day. He stated what is now an obvious scientific fact when he uttered these words. Whether the object of your faith be real or false, you will nevertheless obtain the same effects. Thus, if I believed in Saint Peter's statue as I should have believed in Saint Peter himself, I shall obtain the same effects that I should have obtained from the Saint Peter. But that is supposition. Faith, however, produces miracles. And whether it is true or false faith, it will always produce the same wonders. The views of Paracelsus were also entertained in the 16th century by Pietro Pomponazzi, an Italian philosopher and contemporary of Paracelsus, who said, "We can easily conceive the marvelous effects which confidence and imagination can produce, particularly when both qualities are reciprocated between the subject and the person who influences them. The cures attributed to the influence of certain elixirs are the effect of the imagination and confidence." Quacks and philosophers know that if the bones of any skeleton were put in place of saint's bones, the sick would nonetheless experience beneficial effects if they believed that they were veritable relics. Then if you believe in the bones of saints to heal, or if you believe in the healing power of certain waters, you will get results because of the powerful suggestion given to your subconscious mind. It is the latter that does the healing. Now let's explore Bernheim's experiment. Hippolyte Bernheim, the professor of medicine at Nancy, France, 1910 to 1919, was the expounder of the fact that the suggestion of the physician to the patient was exerted to the subconscious mind. Bernheim, in his Suggestive Therapeutics, page 197, tells a story of a man with paralysis of the tongue which had yielded to no form of treatment. His doctor told the patient that he had a new instrument which he promised to heal him. He introduced a pocket thermometer into the patient's mouth. The patient imagined it to be the instrument which was to save him. In a few moments, he cried out joyfully that he could once more move his tongue freely. "Among our cases," continues Bernheim, "facts of the same sort will be found. A young girl came into my office having suffered from complete loss of speech for nearly 4 weeks. After making sure of the diagnosis, I told my students that loss of speech sometimes yielded instantly to electricity, which might act simply as by subjective influence. I sent for the induction apparatus. I applied my hand over the larynx and moved a little and said, 'Now you can speak aloud.' In an instant, I made her saw A, then B, then Maria. She continued to speak distinctly. The loss of voice had disappeared." Here Bernheim is showing the power of faith and expectancy on the part of the patient, which acts as a powerful suggestion to the subconscious mind. Now let's explore producing a blister by suggestion. Bernheim states that he produced a blister on the back of the patient's neck by applying a postage stamp and suggesting to the patient that it was a fly plaster. This has been confirmed by the experiments and experiences of many doctors in many parts of the world, which leave no doubt that structural changes are a possible result of oral suggestion to the patients. Now let's explore the cause of bloody stigmata. In Hansen's Law of Psychic Phenomena, page 153, he states, "Hemorrhages and bloody stigmata may be introduced in certain subjects by means of suggestion." Dr. M. Burr put a subject into somnambulistic condition and gave him the following suggestion: "At 4 o'clock this afternoon, after the hypnosis, you will come into my office, sit down in the chair," and that was armchair, "cross your arms upon your breast, and your nose will begin to bleed." At the hour appointed, the young man did his as directed. Several drops of blood came from the left nostril. On another occasion, the same investigator traced the patient's name on both of his forearms. with the dull point of an instrument. Then, when the patient was in the somnambulistic condition, he said, "At 4 o'clock this afternoon, you will go to sleep, and your arms will bleed along the lines which I have traced, and your name will appear written on your arms in letters of blood." He was watched at 4 o'clock and seen to be asleep. On the left arm, the letters stood out in the bright leaf, and in several places there were drops of blood. The letters were still visible 3 months afterward, although they had gradually grown faint. These facts demonstrate at once the correctness of the two fundamental propositions previously stated, namely, the constant amenability of the subconscious mind to the power of suggestion and the perfect control which the subconscious mind exercises over the functions and sensations and conditions of all the body. All the foregoing phenomena dramatize vividly abnormal conditions introduced by suggestion, and a conclusive proof that as a man thinketh in his heart, subconscious mind, so is he. So this chapter has been completed, and in the next part, that is episode number 15, I will upload the next part of this podcast or of this chapter, and in that episode I will cover the important points to remember from this chapter. So have a good day, stay calm, think positive, and dream big. Thanks for visiting the bloomtalks.com.